Hey, before we get started here, if you are a repeat listener, can you do me a quick favor and rate and review the show right now? We're really making a push to get great guests on the show, and your reviews help us attract the very best guests. So if you could do that, I would really appreciate it. Now let's dive into the show.
It's all about relationships. I spent 11 years building relationships in every market I'm in. Where I get the most opportunities, believe it or not, are property managers.
Hey guys, David Robinson here. Welcome to the Lead Sponsor Podcast. We've got another great episode for you today. I'm joined by Ryan Lawless of Renegade Capital. Ryan started his investing career with $10,000 in his pocket. He moved across the country from Jersey to Colorado and bought his first investment property with $5,000 down and $5,000 to keep living off of. And he's turned that initial investment into over $400 million worth of real estate acquisitions. He focuses on development in urban areas. He also focuses on distressed and value add multifamily opportunities, existing multifamily opportunities. He has invested in different parts of the country, in Kansas City, Oklahoma, and he focuses a lot of his efforts in Colorado. Really enjoyed my conversation with Ryan today. We talk about his journey and saw his grassroots approach to real estate, how he grew from that first investment to where he's at today. We talk about some of the challenges in new development, new construction in this economic environment. He also talks about some of the opportunities he sees coming available, where he's focused on mid-market multifamily acquisition deals that are too small for institutional players, but too big for a lot of the other players. So in that $10 to $30 million range, and how he's really emphasized finding off-market opportunities and what he sees as the biggest opportunities moving forward into this new economic climate. So really enjoyed my conversation with Ryan today, and I hope you enjoy it as well. Without further ado, Ryan Lawless. Mr. Ryan Lawless, welcome to the Lead Sponsor Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I caught Ryan on a day that he's got a cold. You know, I know how that goes. You just got to sort of battle through it, but I appreciate you still being willing to come on and talk with
little,
us.
Two little kids with school, it's just bound to happen, you know?
Yep, it happens. Well, look, I've given the listeners a little bit of, information about your background, but why don't we dive into that a little bit? Let's back up. Let's talk about, you know, what you were doing before you got into the real estate world and what your journey has looked like over quite a few years now. Over 10 years.
Yeah, sure. Sure, man. Born and raised in Jersey, about an hour outside of New York City. So always had this passion towards really urbanism before, you know, my family's not in real estate. No one comes from that. So it was an odd fit for me. But as I grew up, taking the train into Jersey to go see a Rangers game, I'd walk out of Penn Station. If you've ever done that, for the first time you do it, you walk up these stairs and it's just this wall of concrete and energy. And it was one of those things that just blew me away from as early as I can remember. So really at first it was architecture and urbanism. And then as I got older and was deciding college, real estate seemed like a really interesting field. I grew up with parents who, we grew up in condos and, you know, I was the youngest of three. So in high school, I moved three times, right? We would move and my brother would go to college, then we'd downsize and we'd buy these condos and my mom would go in and they'd be fixer uppers. So I always saw that side and appreciated it. And I feel like I have a little bit of that blood in me and that vision. So when it came time for college, the school I went to, Monmouth University, New Jersey, it was the only school in the state at the time that offered a real estate program. So I went there and I was more of like a B minus student. As school wasn't my forte, but I've always been super entrepreneurial and wanted to kind of hustle and I figured I could make money and do some really cool projects. So I got into real estate, had a mentor through my senior year of college out of Asbury Park, New Jersey. And shortly after that, 2011, my early 20s, I just call it a quarter life crisis, but I just decided to move. I didn't want to stay in Jersey my entire life. And, And I knew I wanted to start my own business, but you know, it's so expensive, New York and New Jersey, you just can't do it. I had no money. I had $10,000. I bartended my way through college. So I came to Colorado with $10,000 in 2011 and I started my real estate journey. I bought a $35,000 one bedroom condo, and I bought it because I had $5,000 to put down and still $5,000 to live. So it's been, that was 2011. That was what, 11 years ago. So that it's been a long, long, crazy road, but that's how I started, man. I don't come from, I don't have some big resume. It's always been learning by trial and error and just seeing where we'll go.
So, being a college dropout, I have to ask the question that real estate program that you attended at Mammoth, what do you feel like that was beneficial to real world execution on real estate deals?
I respect my time at Mammoth a lot, but to answer your question, no, absolutely not. You know, I think first of all, back in 2011, or this was 2009, 2010, real estate as a degree was very new. I think it's matured a little bit now, and I think it's a lot more encompassing, and there's things like networking and all these things you learn. But back when I started, there's only a few schools. It was Ivy's, which I certainly wasn't getting into, or a couple other schools on the West Coast, but it was a new concept. So I think it's transformed, and to a young listener now, probably, I'm sure, is way more. But back then, I didn't even learn Excel. I was doing stuff on calculators, those financial calculators. So for me and my time, especially to go straight into entrepreneurial real estate, I would say it wasn't, but you know,
And we also have to point out that the mentor that you had your senior year probably had an impact on your career.
Huge.
And that relationship probably or maybe doesn't come about unless you're in that environment. And you know, I've got a lot of friends here. The University of Utah is well known for their MRED program, their Master's of Real Estate Development program here. And an incredible program with great instructors, real world, real life, you know, case study type work. And, you know, so there's definitely programs available. I was just curious about your experience.
Yeah, I mean, I would say college in general for someone like me as an entrepreneur. And I think that's the big talking point now, you know, especially with how expensive college is and the debt you get into. I'm not trying to talk people out of college, but it's just for me, did it resonate? Did it kind of get me somewhere? No.
Yeah, but, understood. Yeah. Understood. So I want to talk about this move to Colorado with, you know, roughly 10 grand in your pocket. You buy this first. What caused you to go to Colorado? What was the pull to Colorado 10 years ago?
Great question. So I grew up on the coast, like on the ocean. So I really, you know, I loved my lifestyle, and it was, you know, work hard, play hard. And so when it was time, again, it was just kind of one of those, you know, you're in your early 20s, you're like, man, do I want to stay here forever? And I couldn't afford New York City as much as I would have loved to be there. So it was really between Miami and Colorado. Miami was, at the time, this was 2011. This was, if you guys, I don't know how old you are, but this was like the depth of the recession, right? So Miami was just not, today it is the darling, it is the talking point on everything. It was not that. But it was on the ocean. I was a young single guy, you know, a lot of great things about Miami. But Colorado is affordable, you know. I mean, as someone who, as I said, I bartended through college, so I just came here. I came out here and visited and said, man, like there's just, it was a blank canvas. 2011, man, it just wasn't what it is, and it's unbelievable what has happened over the last 11 years. But Denver was probably in the second inning, maybe, and there was just so much opportunity. It was affordable. I could live downtown with very little money. And I just felt like I could do stuff back in, it's only 11 years ago, but back in those days, it sounds so long time ago, but you know, I could make moves with the money I had, you know? And so it wasn't just that one investment. I was also, at the time, I didn't know what wholesaling was, but I was wholesaling. I was reaching out to owners directly, and I had very, very limited capital. So I had to go somewhere that was high growth. A lot of young people. I was in my early 20s, so I wanted to be there. I wanted to be the up and coming city. Quality of life was super important. So the mountains. So I just gave it a shot, and it worked out. I'm very fortunate.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah. So in the last 11 years, you dove headlong into the real estate world, bought that first condo back then for 35 grand. Today, you've acquired roughly $400 million in real estate. You've got a significant amount of deals under development currently. I think you had mentioned, how much do you have currently? $120 million.
Yeah, in various stages.
Right,
yeah. It's been super active. It's obviously a tough environment now, but you know, it's been such a long road. It's been a very sort of start at $10,000 or $35,000 deal to get there. It's been a long, unique path. I've learned a lot, I should say.
Well, let's talk about that journey a little bit. How does one progress from, you know, buying that $35,000 condo and maybe give us the 40,000 foot view of what your world's looked like over the last decade? And just talk about sort of this progression to get to where you are today and what you're focused on. I mean, doing larger projects, urban type development deals.
Yeah.
Revitalizing, you know, older, distressed, maybe forgotten real estate deals. So talk to us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, because I don't have that experience of working under somebody, to be completely honest, the first, 2011 to 2000, I didn't start raising money until about 2018. I didn't even know raising money. I didn't know GPs. I didn't know LP sponsorship. I didn't know that stuff. I mean, literally, I just didn't know any better. And I started with that deal, that $35,000 deal. Then I went and bought a couple of single families, realized that I just am not a single family guy. Just, you know, you really got to know how to swing hammers, and it's not me. So I bought my first duplex in 2013. And from there, it's been very incremental, organic. I've went from a duplex to a 4 to a 12 to a 24. You know, it's been very slow. I wasn't one of those guys who just said, hey, woke up one day and said, I'm just going to go buy, you know, 200 units. And people are doing that all over the place now. But back then I didn't do that. So for the first six or seven years, I was just using my own money. I started expanding out of Denver, went to Kansas City, then went even further east to Ohio, Kentucky. And I accumulated about 1,100 units just on my own with a partner, a balance sheet partner of mine. And that was it. And then around kind of towards this 17, 18. And back then also, I don't think sponsorship and syndication was as popular as it is today. So, you know, kind of 2017, 2018, I started seeing my colleagues raising money and they were just on this trajectory that I was like, dude, what? Wow. Like, what am I doing wrong? And that's what I really learned. I mean, then so I decided essentially from then to kind of sell. At the time, about 95% of what I owned was east of Colorado. So I just sold it all and wanted to kind of rebuild and restructure and start raising money. So I didn't start raising it until 18. And that's when I started really scaling. You know, scaling, it takes time. And then the development came into play around COVID. My good friend, Adam Fenton, tons of development experience. He was starting his own shop and he was looking for a partner to come in and help him build this shop and also to kind of do the, you know, both the investment side and the development side. So I kind of came in and helped build the investment platform of Narrate, it was called, which is still around today. And we started developing these projects. We have a 78 unit under construction where it breaks ground this month here in Central Denver, right? Urban infill, high quality deal. We have 131 unit in downtown Colorado Springs, which is a 7-story deal. And then we have a garden style deal, 120 units in Northern Colorado Springs. So we're really active there. So it's been, you know, development. I've only been doing development for about 2 years. It's really hard. It's definitely, you know, the money, the fees and all those things are great, but it takes a lot out of you for sure, especially in this environment. Yeah.
And I want to dive into a little bit about some of the challenges and opportunities that the, you know, current market is presenting to you in the development space. But before we do that, let's just talk about what your business looks like today. You've alluded to the fact that you've got, you know, roughly 120 million in projects under development, 78 unit, 131, 120 units, all within, you know, the general greater Colorado.
Uh-huh.
So talk to us a little bit about what is your focus today? What does your business look like? How is it structured? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Hey, real quick, before we get back to the show,
If you and I haven't connected yet, head on over to canovocapital.com and subscribe to my investor network. From there, my team will be in touch to schedule a brief call. I'd love to connect with you and learn more about your investing goals, what you're working on, what you're looking to do in the future, and also let you know about some of the projects we're working on over at Canovo Capital. So go down into the show notes right now and click on the link, or just head on over to canovocapital.com and subscribe to my network there. And I look forward to connecting with you. Let's get back to the show.
Sure. So yeah, I mean, really kind of thoughtful urban infill development is one piece of our business for sure. I would say the much larger piece of our business is opportunistic acquisitions, especially now more than ever. We feel that there's a wave. We feel there's a window of opportunity here that we're entering into that we want to take advantage of. As you know, over the last, 7 years, it's been a crazy market. It's been a seller's market. Finally, we've seen that change. We've all been waiting for this time as a buyer. So we're hyper-focused on finding these value-add distressed deals. And frankly, I didn't really talk about it before, but that's really where I cut my teeth. Value-add acquisition, primarily multifamily. But I would say Renegade Capital today, what we're focused on is opportunities. So we're pretty agnostic across asset classes. So we just seek value. So our thesis is to go find unsophisticated, let's call it mom-and-pop ownership, off-market, underutilized, underserved buildings, and not the lack of the off market's key for us because I can't compete with somebody with institutional level equity. It's my cost of capital is too high, so it's going after these and eliminating the competition and taking these deals down, reposition, stabilize, and then either sell or whatever we're doing. So we have that side, and that's probably the most active piece. We're local here in Colorado, Kansas City, Oklahoma City, and Utah.
Got it. Awesome. Yep. Well, let's talk about off-market acquisitions because I have a feeling, obviously there's the institutional space, which 95% of those deals pass through brokers, if not 99%, yeah. Right?
Yep.
But there is this niche space, which is inside of the institutional, but too big for the individual investor, where there's a unique opportunity to potentially find those gems that have been managed and owned by mom and pop owners. They're tired. They've undermanaged their deal. And there may be opportunities, but the key is finding those, right?
Yeah.
So you've sort of carved out this niche of being able to find those. Talk to us about strategies around finding and acquiring off-market deals direct from owner.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's not always just from the owner though. It's all about relationships, right? Mm. So I spent 11 years building relationships in every market I'm in. So where I get the most opportunities, believe it or not, are property managers. So you can build a good relationship with the property manager, and it's pretty, it seems pretty obvious, right? You go in, you build a relationship with, Jim or Sally or whatever, and, you just cultivate that relationship. And then when it's like, hey, let me know if there's sellers, and more often than not. So I have a particular deal, good case study in Kansas City. I have a $10.5 million deal off market. My manager, who's been my manager for there forever, knows the seller. Obviously, who's going to be the first to know anything, right? So he had a good idea that this person was in a situation where they needed to move on from the deal. So we're taking the deal down. We're doing a loan assumption, which I think is also another point that's really, really key right now. And off market, it's called the West Plaza neighborhood, which is as good as a neighborhood it could be. 71 units, nothing big. And back to your point of, I think there's a size, what I call the mid-market size, and that I think it's roughly 10 to 25 million. Above, under 10 million, you're kind of dealing with just about anybody.
Right.
Over 25, the big boys, the institutions, they can't mess with anything too small. Just isn't the economies of scale. Just they get paid by the checks they put out. So we found this sweet spot of around 10 to 25 million, 10 to 30 million, where we play the mid-market space. And that's where we find, the ownership that might be a little bit more than mom and pop, but still they're not uber sophisticated.
Right.
And that's really our sweet spot. So our thesis is around that range. And then it's just building relationships. And you know, we do get deals from brokers,
Sure.
especially now. Brokers, more than ever, listing a deal isn't okay, put the deal out, line it up, and get 10 buyers across the door. Brokers, especially today, I mean, they are just trying to get deals done. And
Yeah.
whereas the conversation used to be to sellers, well, we go to the market, we do two rounds of highs and bests, we get the big price. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
So they just want to get their deal done. So they're going to people who can close, they can close quickly, and who don't, you know, play the games of all the retrades and all those things. And we take pride in our reputation over the last 11 years has been to, you know, get deals done quickly and efficiently.
Talk to us a little bit about this deal in Kansas City, the $10 million deal with the loan assumption. If you're able to, I don't know where you're at in that deal cycle, but talk to us a little bit about how it's structured and why this was advantageous.
Yeah, so we are under, we're just going under contract on it. So there's a lot of work to do. So let me preface with that. However, aside from location, which is number one, right? We are location based through and through, no matter what. The deal, what's really interesting about the deal is the ownership group bought the deal, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, and then refinanced it over the last, I think, or no, maybe they bought it a little earlier, but refinanced in the last 12 to 24 months. So, and one of the owners within the group is a property management, has a property management company. I don't think they're a very quality group, so they're struggling on the operations. It's caused a rift between the ownership group. It's everything as a buyer, it's everything you, I guess, look for, especially in value add. So what's interesting is the loan assumption. It's a Freddie, it's a non-recourse agency loan that, because they refinance, the leverage is really strong. The leverage is 72%, which in today's environment is impossible to get. There's no way you're getting leverage. You're getting leverage of 50 to 60% on agency debt. So that's number one. And then the rate is 4.4%, which, as we all know today, rates are probably high fives, if not sixes. So it's in every way a great deal. It's better than what we could get on the market as a typical acquisition. And we're coming into what is, in a way, a distressed ownership group. So they're highly motivated to sell. You know, the assumption will take time. It's a little costly. It's a little bit more costly, but it just fundamentally, it's everything we look for, value add. Half the deal is already renovated. So, you know, we're coming in with a really good basis on a deal that we think long term with fixed debt will do really well.
And how long is left on the existing debt?
We have until 2027. So I think we have plenty of time to get through what we think, however long we'll go through this period.
And maybe you haven't got this far into the assumption, but is there anything you can share, any insight you can share with any of our listeners as it relates to the mechanics of the actual of assuming the loan? Is there anything, any insights that you can share with us for those that maybe
Yeah,
haven't gone through it?
sure. We're pretty early in the process, and this is my first assumption. So I don't have a whole lot yet to provide. I'm happy to give you some kind of
Understood.
anecdotal after. But what I do know, it's more timely than anything, right? You have a little fee here and there, but you know, the fees on a $10.5 million deal are pretty marginal. It's just the time. So, and we're also coming in with a tick. It's coming out of a tick, so it's going to even be a little bit more complicated.
Got it.
But yeah, it's just a little early in the process.
Well, I just, and the reason why I'm curious, because I do, it's to be expected that we're going to see a lot more loans assumed on their existing terms than we have in the past, clearly. And so, and it's something that I'm less familiar with, so I'm interested in learning more about it. But let's move forward and let's talk about sort of your thoughts about where this market is headed, especially as it relates to development. I mean, you've got 120 million under development. Does that keep you up at night, knowing that there's a lot of uncertainty out in the market right now? Talk to us about your thoughts about sort of overarching economic environment and then how that's impacting your business specifically.
I mean, so listen, we all know anybody who's kind of out there understands that construction costs have been absolutely insane. So it's been really hard to navigate that aspect of the side. And we do feel that cost over the next 6 to 9 to 12 months, whatever this is, we do think as projects whether it's from financing or construction costs, are going to blow out and a lot of stuff's going to come off the boards, that we do see cost hopefully normalizing. Not to mention, we think the supply chain, like, it's just all going to start to catch up. And frankly, the trades, it's a lot of it's the trades, it's the MEPs for the most part of what we see. Lumber's coming down, but a lot of that stuff, you know, they've had all the business, and I think that's going to slow down. So I think they're going to be more motivated. It's pretty, you know, supply and demand, right? So we do see that. That being said, interest rate, cost of capital, whether it's on the equity or debt side, is going to be a lot higher. So it's a tough environment. You know, I mean, we're certainly concerned. We have one project of 120 that we're fully entitled, ready to break ground. We are actually holding, kind of on a holding pattern now,
yeah,
to see where costs go. That's one of our Colorado Springs projects, just because we think there's been a huge glut of product that has been on the boards in downtown Springs that we think is just, like everyone, like us, it's just not going to happen. So yeah, we're going to see if there's a window to see things come down a bit, because we own the land, you know, we have that optionality to do that. So development's been extremely difficult. And I think where, you know, we all are seeing, I think rent growth is coming down quite a bit. I think we're seeing some rent decreases. So there's some major headwinds for sure. But if you have, in my opinion, if you have a long-term perspective investment thesis, then I think, you know, our locations are so central. We are A++ driven on locations that we might see a rocky 2 years, 3 years, whatever it might be, but we're so long-term driven that we think the locations will win out at the very end.
Yeah. And do you feel a pull to lean into existing value add under the current economic environment, or are you still out there looking for new development deals?
We are rezoning. We're in the process of a rezone right now on a smaller site, 16,000 square foot site in central Denver, that upon rezone, we're going to build. What we're going to build, we don't quite know yet, and when we have time. It's actually a joint venture with the owner, which is a really good situation. You know, there's just no gun to your head type situation. Right. We are pretty hyper-focused right now on acquisition, value-add acquisition. Again, yeah, we feel that there's going to be distress. And I personally believe there's going to be distress in some of the most, what I've been over the last few years, the most darling of markets, the Phoenixes. I think things have been getting so crazy in Phoenix that I think you're going to see a lot of this. Well, I know for a fact, you know, there's a lot of these younger kind of next generation, whatever you want to call them, syndicators who came in and just kind of grew really quickly and went the approach and, you know, floating debt, short-term debt. You can't underwrite 7-8% rent growth every year. I think there's going to be some major issues. I mean, Phoenix is already coming down. I think there's going to be some opportunity in some of these really attractive markets, some, you know, Las Vegas, maybe a little bit of Salt Lake, depending. And so it'll be interesting to see, but we're hyper focused right now on acquisition, especially as we kind of turn this development pipeline through. I'm just not looking to take on more until we see some of these things go through.
And, you know, as you have a goal of ramping up acquisitions and looking for those distressed opportunities, where do you see yourself putting the majority of your effort as far as acquisitions are concerned? You have alluded to how important those relationships are, and so I understand that. Aside from, like, the relationships that have already been built and already been established, is there any channels or strategies that you're going to implement to increase your deal flow at this point in time?
Yeah, you know, we were talking internally about going kind of the lender route and starting to talk to lenders. I think it's a little early. I think this is going to take time to play out, right? And I think at the end of the day, we have a lot of relationships over the last, you know, whatever, 11 years. I think the best thing we could do is just keep a solid pulse and constant communication with our brokerage community, our management community, our lender community, and just kind of see what happens. I think you're going to need to be very are adaptable. I think it's not just going to be multifamily. I think a lot of the multifamily, the people, they'll be able to make it through. There will be opportunities, but I don't think it's going to be as distressed. It'll be interesting to see. I think this is going to be different, right? I don't think this is just going to be, you can look at 08 and see, okay, this is what happened. I think this whole system, this whole process is going to come out differently. And I could be wrong. Maybe we just kind of go, like, remember when we thought early COVID, we thought we were going to see pain and it ended up being a huge boom. I mean, I think most people can agree things are going to get choppy for a bit. How long and how deep it gets is what's up for debate. I personally don't think it's going to be a very long process. I think by the end of, depending on who you listen to or who you read, I think it's maybe by the end of next year, maybe early into 24, when, let's say, the next administration comes in. That's going to be the talking point. People are going to want to kickstart the economy. How are we going to do that? So I think there's a window here, like I said before, that I think it's not going to be open for very long. So I think it's taking advantage of the opportunities we get now. Underwriting long-term debt, being very conservative in your approach, low leverage, get fixed debt. And I think those who buy now, there's a lot of people on the sidelines, those who buy now and buy well, and I'm not saying 50 cents on the dollar, just buy well, well-located assets, quality assets, and be really conservative in your way you structure the deals, I think you're going to come out ahead, personally.
Yeah, love that insight. Well, look, I want to start winding down here. This has been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed hearing about your story and some of the insights you have. As we wind down, a few final questions for you. What's the biggest challenge that you're facing right now in your business that we could all learn from?
I would say the communication with investors pretty consistently. I think communication now more than ever, and I mean consistent communication, is super important. My investors, can't speak for anyone else, but my investors are high net worth people who make their money in different businesses. They're passive, obviously, but they all hear and read the same news, and a lot of them, as smart or wealthy as they are, they still, there's a lot of concern, right? So it's talking to these people and keeping them at bay. And, there's a lot of people concerned right now. So it's because, don't forget, these opportunities come, you also need to raise the money, or I need to raise the money. So it's about having that. And, in times of distress or recession, whatever you want to call it, volatility, it seems good on paper, but then you got to be able to raise the money. And those investors, you got to keep them. So it's been providing them data and constant communication, what we're seeing in the market. And I think that has been really helpful to make people comfortable and wanting to invest, get their money out of the volatility of the market every day and invest in hard assets like real estate.
Yeah, love it. Ryan, what is the best way for our listeners to connect with you and learn more about what you have going on?
Sure, yeah. Just you can email me at ryan@renegadecapital.co. Would love to connect with anyone and provide any insight or, answer any other questions you guys might have. Anything early on in my career, that's how I learned. It was reaching out to people, random people, and just asking. And you'd be surprised how many people respond back and are willing to help. So I would urge, I don't know if it's me or anybody, to go out, reach out and ask questions.
Yeah, love it. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes. So if you've enjoyed our conversation with Ryan, and you want to connect with him, go down to the show notes right now, click on that link and connect with Ryan and his team. Ryan, again, an honor to have you on the show. Thank you for coming on and sharing your insights with us. Loved hearing about your journey from, the move from Jersey with $10,000 in your pocket, buying that first condo and working your way through this industry. A lot of people take a different path and they, have a mentor that gets them on the large commercial institutional quality train right away. And then you have others that work their way into it. And I love hearing about sort of, the grassroots starting from the condo and growing your way into $400 million worth of real estate and a lot in the future. So thanks for coming on and sharing that journey with us and your insights. And I look forward to connecting with you again down the road.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Really appreciate it. It was an honor to be on.
Hey, before you go, if you and I haven't connected yet, please head on over to KonovoCapital.com. You can join our investor network or download our free passive investor's guide to multifamily syndications. Either way, I'd love to connect with you personally. Also, I just want to thank you for listening to the show and providing feedback and reviews. If you haven't already, please, please, please take a second and leave us a rating and written review. This helps us to be found by new listeners and helps us attract great guests in the future. Thanks again for listening to the show, and I hope you have a great day.